This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. New Bloomington Alderman Jamie Matthews says the city is not all that user-friendly for entrepreneurs.
There are no instructions anywhere that I can find on how to start a business. What documents do you need to bring when you go in and talk to planning and code enforcement, when you go to talk to engineering?
Turning the city of No into how can we help? Plus, home is where the RV is, the final chapter of a year-long odyssey, and getting rid of a couple persistent garden pests. And a GLT News update on the way. This is Sound Ideas on GLT.
Support for the Sound Ideas podcast comes from listener contributions to GLT, with additional support from Country Financial Representative Justin M. Boyd. Information at justinmboyd.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. The makeup of the Bloomington and Normal Town Councils changed earlier this month when new council member was sworn in for duty in Normal, and two new aldermen took the oath of office in Bloomington. Over the next several weeks during Sound Ideas, you'll hear interviews with the newly elected council members. While elected for the first time, Ward 1 Alderman Jamie Matthews is not a political newcomer. He was appointed to serve as Ward 1 Alderman in 2013 by then-Mayor Steve Stockton, but lost to Kevin Lauer as a write-in candidate. This year, he handily defeated his opponent and has attended two council meetings prior to this interview. Matthews ran on rebuilding infrastructure, creating a better business climate in Bloomington, and rebuilding communication with Ward 1 residents. He tells GLT's Mike McCurdy the increased constituent communication began during the campaign.
We made it out and knocked on the door of every person we could find that had voted in any election, be it a local election, state election, or federal election. So a lot of great communication there, participated in all the candidate forums, and I've gotten a lot of email, an amazing amount of the communication is coming in through the Facebook page, actually. It's, you know, different than what I expected, but however, it's easiest for people to reach out to me.
How would you characterize communication in Ward 1 previously?
One way, you know, from most of the experiences that I have been hearing about from talking to people is people would voice concerns and ask questions and just never get responses.
So how's Facebook working out, and what are you hearing?
The questions have been all over the board. I mean, some folks have had questions about their personal property and were interacting with city contractors on that. Some folks are, I've gotten messages about, you know, every topic that the council has got in front of them right now, one of the topics that there's an organized campaign somewhere in town asking for recycling bins on the streets. So every street corner that has a trash can, they want a recycling bin next to that.
Uptown Normal has some of that.
Yeah, exactly. And folks are, I've probably gotten at least 50 messages so far specifically asking, and most of them are form letters, so they come in the exact same way. Some of them have been customized, but I'm not sure what group it is that's organizing it, but I'm getting plenty of messages about it.
You said during the campaign that the city of Bloomington had earned a reputation as the city of no, meaning people with ideas to start a business often faced too much red tape to make that business work. You and your wife actually have two businesses in downtown Bloomington. Did you run into issues when you were trying to open Red Raccoon Games or Kelly's Bakery?
More when we opened Kelly's Bakery, because we didn't know what we were doing. We had this idea that, you know, Kelly's cookies were this good and we could turn this into a business, and the process was just not good. We had a difficult time navigating at the state level, at the county level, and at the local level, at the city level, and working our way through the various departments trying to figure out who we needed to talk to, which approvals we had to get. And I say the county level because the McLean County Health Department was involved for any restaurant. So, you know, navigating that whole process just wasn't easy.
The idea you floated during the campaign was an economic development peer review panel to help cut through or work around some code or policy that might be standing in the way of a good idea. Can you describe this idea a little bit more, and is this something you're still working toward?
Yeah, well, so there are no instructions anywhere that I can find in it, on how to start a business. What documents do you need to bring when you go in and talk to planning and code enforcement, when you go to talk to engineering?
So it needs to be more user-friendly.
Yeah, and I was actually having a conversation with Austin Grammer, who is our economic development guy, and saying, why don't we have this all on the website? Why is there not just a, hey, you're having a meeting with Austin or Tom Dabereiner, here's a list of the documents we need you to bring with you so we can have a cohesive conversation when you show up.
And Tom Dabereiner is the community development director.
Yes, exactly. And you know, why is this not published there? And then every time you set a meeting with somebody, you send them the copy of that link, said, hey, make sure you bring all this stuff with you here. You know, I know Tom has already implemented a process where they're bringing all the various departments together to talk about economic projects that we have. So that part, they've already started doing that. I think that's awesome, and we need to keep the momentum going there.
The other area you want to focus on is infrastructure, building up from the ground up. What do you want to do? What do you want to see? And do you think the council and staff are headed in the right direction?
I think that the number one thing that we hear from constituents is the roads, right? We always hear about the roads because that's what you can see. When you're driving your car, you experience, and there are some nasty potholes that are out there. I'm not arguing that at all. The problem is that many of the places that the roads are having problems where they've been patched, the patches are falling apart, is because we had to fix the water mains, we had to fix the sewers underneath. You know, especially in the south and southwest parts of town, we've got sewers that are over 100 years old. We have brick sewers still in various places. And as an example, just this wintertime in downtown Bloomington, they tore up Center Street at least 5 times that I'm aware of. And it was for water main breaks. They would they'd open the street up, they'd fix the water main break, they'd patch everything together. So now we got another patch on the road. And then a week and a half later, they would be 20 feet further down the road, which I'm assuming that the fixed pressure of the water now blew out the next failing part of the pipe. And they just kept marching up Center Street and then around the corner over onto Jefferson Street. And it's just one patch after another on that stretch now. So,
and it probably all still needs to be replaced.
A significant portion of it does, yes. And so what I want to do is I want to put more focus on saying, okay, we know the streets are a problem, but if we don't fix the foundation, if we don't fix the sewers, if we don't fix the water mains, which we know are in bad shape, we're just trying to get a gauge on how bad they are, we're going to continue this process of tearing the streets up over and over and over again.
There's been this discussion between staff and council sort of focusing on which part of, or the conversation is focused on where the city should focus mm-hmm. some of these efforts. Do you think council and staff are sort of on the same page here?
I think we're getting there. When I say you know, that I want to focus on the sewers and the water mains, Public Works and the Water Department are both, you know, singing the praises immediately because they know it's an issue. But the superficial need is the one that is in you know, that everybody's talking about in every meeting. So
if money in a city budget is targeted for a sewer oversizing project for 13,000 acres of land on the Far East Side that isn't in the city limits yet, for homes that aren't even built yet, are you sure staff is on board with focusing on the city's historic core?
Well, there are. So that was written into a contract that got executed, which brought it to the top of staff awareness. And so that, you know, that contract, when it got the city got notified by the developers, that's, of course, brings it to top of mind now that we have to make a decision now on if we want to oversize the sewer or not. And, you know, so one of the questions that I asked Jim Karch in the meeting on Monday is, you know, you were going to go back and look to see if the 8-inch sewer was big enough to finish the Kickapoo Creek development. Is it big enough or not? And the answer that we got from Public Works is yes, they believe it is so. So I don't know that we have to spend that money there.
So are you supportive of an amendment striking that from the FY18 budget?
With a couple more clarifications on numbers, you know, one of the questions that David Sage asked was, you know, what can we do with this number? I know Scott wants to do sidewalks in the west part of town, and those are desperately needed as well. David wants to know, you know, what can we do with the money? Can we do more sewer relining with that and lengthen the amount of time we can keep some of these sewers functional until we can actually fix them in a permanent fashion?
Let's stick with streets for a moment and the traffic on those streets. The council signed off on moving toward a transportation commission, replacing the Staff Traffic Advisory Commission. This should appear on an agenda soon for a council vote. What do you think about this new commission and the current process to deal with citizen traffic or citizen traffic complaints or transportation issues?
Well, first of all, I'm going to throw a disclaimer out there that Amelia and other folks have been working on this for 6 months, and I'm two meetings in right now, so I'm trying to get caught up on everything. In general, the idea, though, I am fully in support of, because right now a lot of the decisions were being made behind a closed door by city staff. They're great staff. There's nothing wrong with that. However, you know, staff is going to go and they're going to follow national engineering standards about this is what we should do on these particular streets and or a streets this wide. And so traffic can go X number of miles per hour on this wide a street. What we've been discovering recently is citizens don't like that process. They don't want people to go as fast through their neighborhoods. And in a lot of cases, we're talking about 45 seconds to, you know, 90 seconds of delay. So it's not a huge delay we're talking about. But the idea of bringing citizens forward and increasing transparency and letting citizens be a part of the process, I mean, I don't know how we go wrong there. Staff is, of course, still going to have to guide them to say, this is what is legal or not legal. We have to follow those recommendations.
Jimmy Matthew was sworn in as Ward 1 alderman earlier this month. You're listening to Sound Ideas on GLT and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media. I'm Mike McCurdy. You're serving on a newly formed downtown task force with two other council members and other elected officials, some downtown business owners, members of the community. What's on your short list of priorities for downtown as it concerns this commission?
Well, I think that so for me, it goes back to that conversation about infrastructure. You know, one of the things that I'm concerned about is we don't actually know how bad all the problems are in downtown. We know we've got bad streets. We know we have cracked sidewalks. But we don't actually know with any kind of certainty how bad the sewers are, how bad the water mains are, other than we have to keep digging them up to fix breaks. But we don't have a comprehensive picture of what they look like. And in the comprehensive plan and in the downtown master plan, that's one line item in each of those documents is, you know, fix the infrastructure. But everything else we do, I don't want to spend money on streetscaping or lighting or anything else the plan calls for if we're just going to have to dig it up to fix the infrastructure again. So I'm really focused on that infrastructure piece of it, and I'm really focused on making sure we are working with business owners and property owners so that their locations can stay open and functional and viable while we're fixing things.
Mayor Renner and I talked a little bit about this during the council meeting. You talked maybe, you know, that some streets could be closed for months. Are you envisioning sort of a ground-up infrastructure overhaul like Uptown Normal went through?
I'm going to have to defer some of that to Public Works to tell us what it's going to take, but it could be that way. You know, we haven't actually opened these streets up and looked at what's underneath of them. I think the last time that anybody really did a comprehensive look at them, I want to say somebody told me 1925 was the last time. And, you know, there's a lot of documentation about where the original sewers and water pipes in the older parts of towns went that was destroyed in the fire in 1900. So I don't know.
What's a 1925 digital camera look like that snakes through a sewer line?
I think that they were talking about.
Well, they send people down there.
There's still a lot of the old steam tunnel lines that run underneath the downtowns. They've closed most of the entrances. A lot of the businesses, even when I used to, you know, I used to work for Dave's World, and we had a location downtown on Main Street. And
Dave's World is a blast from the past.
Oh yeah,
an old internet provider in the
Central
community.
Central Illinois' first big internet provider before Comcast and Frontier and everybody came in, but. The steam tunnels were still viable and they're still down there. We were talking about running fiber optic through those steam tunnels in 1996. I don't know, you know, the city at the time said, we don't know where everything goes. We don't think this is a viable solution because we don't know where the steam tunnels go. So, you know, it's going to be kind of an interesting process to see what we have to do.
Where does a downtown anchor, perhaps a hotel, rank in your list of things you want to see happen in downtown Bloomington?
I think that any development that were to happen to the property that we've all been talking about, which is the front and center building, I think that any development that happens there is a good thing. You know, to me, if it's a hotel and the CVB and our experts are saying that a hotel works here and a developer wants to come in and spend their money to do it, awesome. But I think that building could also be a great location for retail on the first floor, maybe a restaurant or a bar that faces, you know, a bar to kind of catty corner from the Coliseum, catching all that traffic, going to all the sporting events and everything. I think those would be good uses with apartments up above it. I think we probably have plenty of office space downtown right now, but I know there is no vacancy for apartments. Trisha Stiller at the Downtown Bloomington Association normally has a list of people who are looking for apartments. So, you know, when we opened the bakery 12 years ago, there was something like 130 people who lived downtown. And now there's over 1,000 people living in apartments and lofts above the downtown. It's a huge transformation in that 12-year period. And I think there's still room for growth.
Would you be supportive of a public-private partnership? The public money could be, you know, any sort of mix, but a lot of these sort of redevelopment projects anymore don't take place without some sort of public dollar component.
Yes, if depending on how the numbers work out. You know, so Russell Francois is the architect who's got an office right next to the bakery. I've worked with him for years on different commissions and councils. And he says, you know, what the information he's passed on to us is this is table stakes to play the game anymore. If we want these developers to come in, if we want them to create projects that create jobs, that create value, this is how we have to do it. We can say no to them and we can choose to walk away from the table, and that's fine too. But if we want things to happen, public-private partnerships are going to continue to happen. I would just say I do want them to be tied to performance of the business and of the deal, though.
What's the lifespan of the front and center building? If you walk away from it, how much will that building survive your first term as an alderman?
You know, everybody says that architecturally or engineering-wise, the framework of the building is solid. The roof has issues and it leaks, but I don't think it's at a point where it's going to cave in. I had employees who used to live in the apartments that were up on the fourth floor there. They had to move out because of black mold up there. They were getting sick all the time. So it's obviously not habitable. But I don't think from an engineering standpoint, the building's going to collapse on us. It sure doesn't do anything to promote the vitality of a downtown where 1,000 people live and all these businesses are operating when you have this one giant derelict structure there.
Let's talk about cooperation between Bloomington and Normal. Here's what you had to say about relations between the two municipalities during a GLT League of Women Voters candidate forum in March.
The more important thing now is to remind folks that we are really a single community. People that have just moved here in the last decade don't even understand why there's a separate Bloomington and Normal. It's confusing to them. And we need to focus on that single community effort with libraries and fire stations. I think we need to bring the shared sales tax back to the table and have a much further, much more detailed conversation and look at that to see if that becomes a tool that we can use for economic opportunity for the entire area. You know, right now we have had businesses who have played mom versus dad and to run and see who they can get to give away the candy.
That's audio from a March candidate forum held by GLT and the League of Women Voters. Jamie Matthews is in the studio. How do you move forward after the damage that was seemingly inflicted after the Metro Zone was dissolved?
I think interpersonal communications, we need to get people talking again. We need to get back to the table. And a lot of that is meetings that various aldermen are having outside of official meetings, just one-on-one. You know, you have to get to know the other person to understand what their motivations are before you can actually attempt to come to any sort of a reasonable agreement on how to move forward. You know, as much as I hate to hear a recording of my own voice, I find myself agreeing with myself. So it's
You shouldn't listen to this interview when it airs, though.
Yeah. I have since met with the fire chief, though, and found out that Bloomington Normal probably are not going to be able to share a fire station because of different protocols and procedures and stuff. But the library, an Eastside Library thing, could still be a viable partnership because if I have a Bloomington Library card, I can still go to Normal and check books out anyway. But going back to the main question is it's just communication. It's getting to know each other. I know probably half of the Normal Town Council members. And I want to get to know everybody else and meet them and really understand what are they trying to accomplish and what are their goals and where is Normal trying to move forward to. And I think if we can share those kind of ideas and concepts, that helps heal a lot of wounds.
Do you think that the shared municipal sales tax zone is a realistic goal? And is that something you're actively working on?
It actually came up in conversation again last week when I was talking to Austin Grammer that I still think it's a good idea. There's a ton of details that have to be worked out to make sure we know what the conversation really looks like before we start talking about it. You know, obviously, we know that Bloomington and Normal have both passed sales tax abatements at various times for various development projects. And every single one of those is going to have to be uncovered, looked at, and analyzed and how it affects the total situation. But the reality is if we can stop businesses from, you know, why do you want to move from Bloomington to Normal, Normal to Bloomington? If you want to move because it's a better location, you're going to do better business, that's awesome. But we shouldn't be giving anybody who's already here abatements to make that move, I don't think.
This is Sound Ideas and the first of a series of interviews with newly elected aldermen and town council members. Jamie Mathey was elected April 4th. Five groups are now calling for some sort of citizen-led review board for the Bloomington Police. Where are you on this issue?
So I don't think it's a bad idea. I talked to Chief Hefner. One of the questions I asked him Monday night is there a way that having a citizen review board damages the police department that I'm not understanding? Is there, do we cause a problem? Because I don't want to cause problems, but lack of a citizen review board has caused problems. So, you know, I think there's still a lot of details to be worked out there, but overall, I'm in favor of the idea. And I completely disagree with the concept that I've seen on social media that it's either support the police or support a citizen review board. That's ridiculous. Of course we support the police. They do a fabulous job. We have award-winning officers here in town. We have a force where, I mean, we had one homicide for all of last year for a town our size. That's amazing. And a lot of that is due to our officers' ongoing, you know, mission that they're trying to fulfill. But that, again, it doesn't, there's no way where a citizen review board changes that. All we're doing is trying to get ahead of, you know, every place in the country where we've had a bad situation like a Ferguson or a Baltimore instituted a citizen review board after the fact. You know, how do we get ahead of this? How do we talk about things right now before it becomes a problem?
What do you think of what David Sage had to say, that he doesn't see a need for this review board in light of the other mechanisms for people to file a complaint with the police?
Well, it's hard sometimes. It's hard to be empathetic with people in a situation that you're not in. So this is kind of an awkward example, but I kind of keep coming back to it is I'm 6'5", 300-pound guy, right? My wife is 5'4". And so she is very active in women's rights issues around town and works with supporting various groups and stuff. And she points out to me situations where she would be concerned about her personal safety that I blunder through, not even aware of it, because I've never looked at the world from that point of view where I have to be concerned about my own personal safety. And so trying to keep thinking outside of the box and outside of my own personal situation to be empathetic with others is where I keep going back to. You know, when you have the event at the Stevenson Center last week with the college kids presented that, you know, undeniable statistics that there is a problem in Bloomington that we need to look at. When you have groups like the YW, the ACLU, and everybody else coming to the table saying, this is a problem, can we talk about this? I don't know how we could ignore their voices. I love process and procedure as much as anybody else, but there's something in Congress there that we need to balance out.
There may be contractual issues with the union. At what point do you think some of those issues ought to be on the table during negotiations to try to get some sort of board that actually has some teeth to it? Because if the board can't actually do anything meaningful, then there's no point in really having a board.
Well, at first we at least are the board as an advisory board. You know, could at least point out to elected officials and to Chief Hefner that say, hey, look, we probably would have come to a different resolution on this one. This is a different way of looking at it, a different perspective of looking at these issues. You know, we can't compel an officer to testify in front of any citizen review board. We can't retry somebody if they've already, you know, if there's a process already been sustained. But we can learn from what's being done, and we can move forward with it as a better educated organization, that there are alternate ways to look at the situations that happened. You know, in terms of contract negotiations, that's, again, I'm pretty new at this right now. I don't know. I don't even know what that really involves at this point. So I would defer to our HR department when they're working for the officers. But this is not a them versus us. This is a we're all together. How do we make Bloomington a better community?
Jamie Mathey, thanks for your time today on Sound Ideas.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Ward 1 Alderman Jamie Mathey talking with GLT's Mike McCurdy. He was elected in April and sworn in earlier this month. This is Sound Ideas. ¶¶
Support for GLT comes from Jack Baytall Real Estate Group at Keller Williams. Jack and his team are committed to helping Bloomington Normal continue to thrive by giving back to GLT and other local nonprofits. Current listings at jacksguarantee.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Coming up, home is where the RV is, the final chapter. There's no shortage of pests in the garden, and unfortunately, there are two in particular that threaten to make their way into central Illinois. Patrick Murphy is here to give you fair warning on GLT's Grow.
There are two pests bedeviling gardeners right now, gypsy moths and jumping worms. These are two creatures you don't want anywhere near your yard. I'm Laura Kennedy, and this is GLT's Grow, your source for practical gardening advice from our expert in the field. From the Illinois State University School of Biological Sciences and curator of the Fell Arboretum, it is Patrick Murphy. Hello, Murph.
Good day, Laura.
Today on GLT's Grow, just when you thought it was safe to go in the garden, here comes another problem, the gypsy moth and the jumping worm. Let's focus on the jumping worm to begin with. I'm terrified. Jumping worms?
Yeah, there's definitely an ooh factor here, Laura. And the jumping worm, actually, when I first heard about it, I wasn't sure it was real.
Because it doesn't sound real.
Yeah, and it's just like, well, what's the threat? You know, is this thing jumping into people's line of sight when they're driving down the road causing accidents? You know, oh, my God.
It does sound like 50
sci-fi. You got Tunsis the cat and you got jumping worms. So, but it, really, this thing, this jumping worm first appeared in southeast Wisconsin around 2013. Mm-hmm. It was first discovered by fishermen who had bought some bait at a roadside, bait and tackle type place. There's lots of them around Wisconsin and Michigan, because there's lakes all over the place.
You betcha.
But it's more likely that it hitchhiked in some nursery containers or something like an heirloom that maybe somebody brought from home to the States.
Uh-huh.
Because this jumping worm is exclusive to Asia. It's new.
Oh, it's new. Very new, yeah.
And it's appeared now in 14 counties in southwest Wisconsin, and I think this is relevant to the scenario because we're talking Milwaukee to Lake Geneva, to Kenosha, Racine.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what's right below that is Chicago, Illinois, in one of the most robust nursery areas of the Midwest.
So they could get in there and get shipped all over the place.
That's right. And, you know, if you're a organic farmer and you are using, worms to improve your soil and stuff, that's understandable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's understandable, too, that they would end up in some of the soil mixes and the liners for the plant material you're growing.
So what's the damage that they do?
Well, that's the thing that I think they noticed some damage, and the damage that was noticed was a decline in the development of saplings and other beneficials in the forest. And what happens is this type of worm, it looks a lot like a regular old nightcrawler. It eats the broken leaf debris off of the floor and leaves its castings or its dung, leaves it in return. And you're left with kind of a grainy, depleted soil. It's susceptible also to erosion because that little bit of crumbs of leaves and things that this worm eats, they break down and turn into useful soil amendments for this developing new replacement growth in the forest. So if you don't have that, you know, you introduce other opportunities for bad things to come in.
Mm-hmm.
Honeysuckle would be a perfect example. Kudzu, if you were down south. But the worm, like I say, it looks a lot like a nightcrawler. Can get up to 8 inches long, and night crawlers can get that long also.
Mm-hmm.
But for those of that is fish or that are fishermen or see the night crawlers in our garden, we know that they have a band. A night crawler has a band
right.
that goes around its tubular body. And in night crawler's case, it's the same color as the rest of the worm.
But in the jumping worm.
It's white.
Aha. Uh-huh.
It's white. And the name jumping worm comes from the way this worm reacts when it's touched. It just goes freaked. Yeah, it just goes crazy. And
really, because that's how I feel touching a worm.
Well, I thought about it. It's like, you know, you'd have to have a light to bait your hook at night. But anyway, because, it's like avoiding the hook and it's jumping around and all that stuff.
So it's learned.
Yeah. But there's not a whole lot of new information since 2013. It's just that the number of counties that it shows up in has kept growing and growing. So rather than it being a beneficial to the soil like a nightcrawler is, and I promised my dad I would say this, there was a time when the night crawlers that were left over from when you go fishing, you would just pour them out on the bank and take the container with you.
Mm-hmm.
Don't throw them in the water. Throw it on the bank. And then they would create more pliable soil. And, you know, you could, there's nothing wrong with throwing them in the water.
But what? But if we get these jumping worms in our garden, what do?
You're supposed to just isolate them, which
means good luck.
Don't share your dirt with anybody.
Okay.
Right? Don't dig up a plant and give, because right now, if you went looking for them, you would probably find them. And they'd be very small.
Okay. All right. You're listening to GLT's Grow, our weekly gardening show for those who like to get their hands dirty. This week, dealing with a couple of pests, one of which is the jumping worm, the other of which is the gypsy moth.
The gypsy moth is something that is kind of scary. And if you compare the damage that has occurred to the ash population, and even the ash borer is starting to seek out new genus, new tree flavors, if
oh,
you
no.
will. And, you know, what's a big deal about the ash tree was that they were a significant part of the forest in most communities in the Midwest, some areas up to 15 or 18%. Now, the way that's related to the gypsy moth, which is Limantria, is the genus on that, they were introduced in the 18th century in the U.S. to try and create U.S.'s own silk industry, and it was not successful. And this gypsy moth, it molts five or six times. I think it's five for the male and six for the female. And in the molting process, the little caterpillar keeps getting bigger and bigger, and its appetite gets bigger and bigger.
So it's munching on these ash trees.
Well, the gypsy moth, instead of its flavor being ash, it's oak and maple and elm has already taken a beating in the Midwest, and it's even starting to show up in pine and spruce. Pine and spruce, that's particularly bad for the Midwest because pine is one of the only native conifers we have here, white pine. And spruce, they're a wonderfully adaptive plant, but they represent a big part of the needle canopy in the Midwest. But right now, the gypsy moth is most problematic in the Northeast and Southeast Canada.
Canada. Yeah, yeah. Well, if how do we know, how do we spot this? What's it look like?
So the little caterpillars, the little worms that turn into the moth, they eat the leaves, and they can eat the leaves down to where it looks like there's netting left behind, which is similar to a Japanese beetle. But I also, you can also see that the damage to the leaf has occurred in either a hole been eaten into the center of the leaf, or like when we eat a sandwich where the moth larvae starts on the edge of the leaf and works its way in. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't leave that leaf until it is almost destroyed.
So it is really, really hungry. Is there any way we can treat for this?
There is a way to treat for it. We can apply dormant oil. Dormant oil is a horticultural oil. It's the same thing. It would require multiple applications. So if you had this...
So you got to spray it?
You do. And you would spray this in the late fall.
Mm-hmm.
And you would also do it in the early spring for the third and fourth application before the leaves come out.
Oh,
and the
man.
Oil coats the openings in the insect's body or its egg sarcophagi. And it cuts out the oxygen. That's why you need several applications.
Do we have to worry about hurting beneficial insects with this?
It's possible.
Oh.
It's possible. Dormant oil, that's a con to dormant oil. There's not much else you could do. You have a tree that is attacked by the gypsy moth one year, and it'll probably survive it. But if you get an infestation and there's eggs and stuff, and the moths keep coming back, and the eggs hatch, and you get more larvae, the tree could decline and ultimately die because of the defoliating.
So keep your eye out for that.
Indeed.
Okay, thanks so much, Murph, warning us off these horrible pests. Next week on GLT's Grow, Eric in Hudson wants advice for finding native seeds and plants. So Murph's got some ideas about where we can go shopping for that sort of thing.
That's right.
Good, solid, reputable places. Now, if you've got a gardening question for Murph, we'd love to hear from you. All you have to do is go to our website, fill in the form, and send it along to us. That's wglt.org/grow.
You can download the Grow Podcast weekly at iTunes or wglt.org.
your garden after winter, some plants are barely alive.
We can rebuild it. We have the technology. We have the know-how to make your garden grow. We can make it better than before. Better, greener, growier.
Bring new life to your garden with advice from Murph on Grow. Fridays at 8:50 and 4:50 on GLT. Send your gardening questions to WGLT.org.
Support for GLT comes from Country Financial Representative Justin M. Boyd, helping investors plan for the future and stay on track for retirement and college savings based on their unique situations and goals. Details at JustinMBoyd.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. 10 months and 15,000 miles later, the Pritz family has parked their RV. Jeff and Marcy saved and planned for years so they could both take a year off work and travel the country with their kids, Wayne and Dorothy. Jeff is the former general manager of the Uptown Normal Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. Marcy worked for a nonprofit foundation. But for almost the last year, Jeff drove an RV and grew a massive beard, and Marcy became a road scholar, homeschooling the kids in a rolling RV. GLT's Mike McCurdy catches up with Jeff and Marcy and finds out what's happening next.
We last talked in October. You were headed toward New Orleans. So what's new?
Nothing.
Anything happened between October and today that we should talk about?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, we hit the West Coast and then started going up it, came back, and we're back home now. Heading to Texas. So a couple of stops in between.
The trip has wrapped up. Did it end as planned, or did it sort of just wind down? Did something precipitate the end?
Well, a couple of things. Our route was adjusted because Jeff had to have knee surgery. So that happened in California. And then he also, his hotel that we're moving to Texas for, the construction schedule actually moved up, which is unheard of. But anyway, so he was kind of itching to get back to work, believe it or not.
And was there something with the dog, too, that sort of caused the trip to wrap up, too?
Yes. Our Great Dane got an injury to one of his back legs and was hobbling on three legs, basically. And we didn't know what was going on. And with a big dog, it could be an ACL, it could be a hip. We really didn't want to mess with it. So that really just made us skip our last stop and head straight back to Bloomington so we could go see our own vet. We were so close, so we wanted to go see our own vet.
You're in Wisconsin when it wrapped up.
Exactly.
So 10 months, right?
10 months.
Yeah.
Pretty much exactly.
The last time we talked, you'd covered about 5,000 miles and were on stop number 31. I know a lot of days and stops and miles have elapsed. Can you share a couple of days or stops that sort of stand out in the last...
Yeah,
few months.
There were so many. We ended up 70.
70, yeah. 70 stops.
70 stops and
30 states.
And so great family time with Marcy's parents out in California. We got to see our niece and nephew get into the Southern California High School Championships, finals, I guess. And our niece, they won the Southern California Water Polo Championship, and it was really, really cool to watch them play. I've never seen her play before. So I think that was one of our greatest family time stops. Cool places. New Mexico was great. I think we did White Sands. There was a lot to do around there. That was a really fun stop for us.
You spent some time there, didn't you?
Yeah, probably a good week there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Joshua Tree was phenomenal as always. Prior to that, we stopped in Texas, and actually that's where we broke the news to the children that we were going to be moving there. Came a day after Wayne saw the junior high team practicing football at 7 a.m. and he said, "Man, I love Texas." It just was perfect. So
that all worked out.
Yeah, that worked out. The kids really responded great whenever they heard that. They're going to miss their friends here just like we will, but it was good. So missed the Northwest because of my knee.
And the snow.
Yeah, the snow really precipitated, kind of to go back to your other question on wrapping it up. We kind of thought we'd have this endless summer. And it just didn't work out that way. Spring, we had some great weather in Colorado, but windy, and then it could get cold, and we even had a water hose line froze at one point. And a lot of campgrounds were closed. South Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin. It was not what we thought. We really need to hit that again in the summertime sometime.
So you were going to go up the Oregon coast.
Yeah, that was our plan until the knee went.
And what happened to the knee?
Chunk of bone about the size of a pencil eraser got stuck in my meniscus and under my kneecap, and we had to get it out.
That sounds awful.
It really, really hurt.
Did you actually injure it? I mean, did you actually do something?
It just went.
Really?
It was. I thought I pulled a muscle, and then about a couple of weeks later is when I was just in the shower, and I didn't slip or anything, and all of a sudden it just went in there, and I couldn't even dry off or get dressed. It was miserable.
So some zigzagging in the Southwest, and then you kind of went up to Colorado, right?
Yeah, instead of taking the northern route through Oregon, Washington, and then over Idaho down into Colorado, we went the southern route. So went back through Phoenix and then went north. So outside of Flagstaff, hit the Meteor Crater, hit Winslow, Arizona, on our way to New Mexico, Albuquerque, where I'm a huge Breaking Bad fan, so we tracked down Walter White's
home.
The Chicken Man. Okay. People actually live in his home, so
they're probably not down with that.
No. But yeah, we sat in his booth in the Chicken Man.
El Pollos Hermanos.
But that's not what the name of it. But they have a big logo on the wall. It was kind of cool.
It was fun.
Yeah, and Santa Fe, and then up into Colorado that way, into Denver.
So how did the homeschooling work out? Your kids, Wayne and Dorothy, took a year off from the classroom, and you had to step in.
I did. I will honestly say that was the most challenging part of the trip for me. And in being able to be retrospective with it a little bit, we had no... there was no schedule. There was no continuity with our lives. And it made it really challenging because every day, you know, the kids would wake up and be like, do we have school today? And when I said yes, And I think in a normal homeschool situation, you have that schedule, you have that routine, and you also have a home where, I mean, yes, we had a home on wheels, but it's very confined. It's very small. So there were just a lot of different challenges, but you know, hopefully they'll graduate or not graduate, but move on to the next class and we'll be good.
So you're getting the kids back into school in Denton, Texas. Is the school district there validating your homeschool skills?
I don't know yet. We'll see, I guess. I have to show them my curriculum and the tests, and then the kids will have to take a placement test. So
you could always blame the kids.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and you know what? Wayne loves to tell everybody that down in Texas, they always hold the boys back for sports purposes anyway. So
he may throw the test.
Yeah. Right. So he seems fine with
first
repeating sixth grade.
6 foot three, sixth grader.
You were also interested, Jeff, in life for your kids sort of away from all of the sports for a while. Any regrets from you or from the kids?
No,
taking that?
not at all. We were actually just got back into town and went to my brother's to unload and saw my dad down in Hayworth. And Wayne knew that one of his old teams was practicing. And he's like, we could leave now. I can get there. And so we ran the idea by it, and it was a hard final day coming in, and it was just too much going on, so we didn't. But as of the next day, he started practicing 2 and sometimes 3 days a week, and then he went to Indianapolis and played in a tournament already, and coaches are trying to figure out how we can just leave Wayne with him for the summer. Some days Marcy says, sure. And other days we might want him with us.
So this really speaks to his love for the sport.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys
and
now
his
know.
Friends too.
You know that it's not you guys pushing him into doing this. Yeah. After taking a year off, he jumped right back in.
Right. Yeah. He jumped right back in. I will say that on the road, we had basketballs and there were hoops around, and, you know, he never really was very proactive in going to shoot hoops.
Yeah. We threw a lot of football and a little baseball, but never a lot. I was curious, would he be practicing all the time or was he just going to enjoy the time off? But he didn't miss a beat, and neither did Dorothy with her things. They just jumped right back into it. Very
and smooth sailing with the kids, too, on the trip. I mean, I know there was one meltdown early on, but overall?
Yeah, overall, I think they really enjoyed it. They enjoyed getting to see the country, and they really enjoyed seeing friends and family along the way. We didn't go very many stops before we were stopping with friends and or family, and they enjoyed that a lot, getting to know family and getting to know friends' kids and all that.
So you're relocating to Denton, Texas. Jeff, you're getting ready to open another new hotel. You should have that figured out, right?
Yeah, I'm getting going on it.
And how's it going?
It's great. It's a Gold LEED certified hotel. I have my own solar field. When I did a tour of the property the other day, I got to watch them separate everything. All the wood was here, all the drywall was here, and we've never done that before in my openings, and I just love the fact that this new company is
sustainable. You're talking about the construction waste.
Yeah, the construction waste. And so it's and they track every bit of it all the way, and it's just really amazing. It's one of the best construction companies I've ever seen, and just the company now, O'Reilly Hospitality, I've wanted to work for him for a long time, so really, really happy.
And Marcy, last I heard, you were interviewing?
I am interviewing, yes.
And how's it going?
Good. I had, I guess, my second interview, and it went well. I haven't heard back, so I'm keeping an eye open for other opportunities. But, you know what, I'm not worried about it. Something will happen, and if it takes, you know, through the summer, then that might be a blessing for me to help get the kids situated and everything.
Not to get too deep into the weeds here or into your finances, but this was a long-planned trip. It involved a lot of financial planning. Where do you guys stand now, now that you neither one of you have worked for a year and you sort of depleted some of those savings to do the trip?
You know, coming home a little bit earlier helped on that. We had a lot of crazy things happen that really, we had a huge contingency. Our tenants never moved in and then didn't pay rent, so that was supposed to cover. Our other tenants needed to move out. We had to replace a waterline sewer. We had to do a roof. We painted carpet, all these different things between two different houses. They both finally sold right before we got in. We had the car crash. We had the knee surgery. We've had the repairs on the new car that we had to go buy. So a lot of crazy stuff hit, but we're okay. We're enough to get going. Where we're struggling is getting a loan now to get a house, because once you haven't worked for a short period of time, then all of a sudden it's like you've never worked. And we have great work histories, but we found some lenders I think will get us there, but I've had to go through some work to find those lenders.
Interesting. And your credit rating doesn't count for anything?
Credit rating are our assets. We still have all of our retirement assets and all of our kids' college funds, and we haven't touched those. So this was all, it was always going to be, we weren't going to touch that to do this.
So you talked about the difficulty with your home here in Bloomington Normal. Yeah. What about your rolling home? How did the RV hold up?
It held up really well. It's trying to get fixed right now. They're doing a great job out at Cummins, I believe.
Cummins. Get it fixed?
Yeah, just a lot of little things. So we had some items on there that did not work from the start. The sunscreen up front, the TV in the back bedroom, a USB port, little small stuff. Problem was, they always need to hold it forever, and we couldn't stay any place. So we kept trying to call ahead and get it pre-authorized, and we were never able to get it done. And Thor is working with us now to still honor the one-year warranty and get them done. And then Wayne put his size 13 through a mirror in the bedroom one day, so we had to get a new mirror. And I put my hand through a roof vent. I had to get a new roof vent. But just all little things. But it held up great. Mechanically, it was awesome.
And you named it Someday because everyone you talked to about your trip said, I'd like to do that someday. How many miles did you put on it?
Just under 13,000. So
not as many as I actually would think.
I thought it was going to be closer to 15, but I think the Northwest taking it out and then taking that extra month out, I think kind of took out that extra 1,000. But it wasn't as much as we thought either.
So you're getting it fixed. Is it go out to pasture? You're going to hang on to it, do another, maybe an annual trip every year instead of doing a trip for an entire year, maybe just take one short trip every year.
Yeah. We are going to hang on to it for now because, honestly, we might need to live in it down in Texas for a little while. But eventually, in the short term, we are planning to sell it and maybe look at getting something a little smaller. We're definitely not done with our RV adventures, but someday we'll have to do a someday two or something.
Yeah, it was great. We don't need something that big for just our day-to-day. We could go down to a smaller one for some weekend trips and that, and we enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun, but we really bought that for the trip. And so we'll see what we do for the next trip.
Your trip was documented online. Have you heard from anybody that maybe you've inspired to do something similar?
We actually have. Just recently, I heard from an old colleague in St. Louis who had just gotten wind of what we did, and I referred him to the blog, and then he emailed me through the blog and asked a whole bunch of questions, and he started off by saying, you know, my wife and I had been kind of flirting with this, and you guys have really pushed us to make this happen. And then he asked some pretty specific questions in terms of, how'd you figure out what kind of RV to buy? You know, did you rent or buy? You know, how about budgeting? And how did you know where you wanted to go? You know, just very, very basic questions. And so it was fun. It was fun to know that we kind of gave someone that push.
And you've heard from a couple of people well, Jeff. And what's like the number one piece of advice you would give someone? Is it to start saving early?
First of all, write it down. as we talked to people, they said, you know, we want to do something like this. And I said, really, write down your someday, whatever it might be. Maybe it's a sailboat in the Caribbean. Maybe it's just a month somewhere that you got to save for. And once you write it down, then start to save and put a little bit away and have a separate fund that you just simply, that's what you have it for. And we got lucky with some investments as well, but we just lived simply. And we didn't go buy the new car and the new bigger house and the boats and all that. And we just kind of lived simply knowing that that's what we wanted to do. And so really, my number one piece of advice is write it down, figure out what your someday is, and then start working towards a timeline on it.
Jeff, Marcy, thanks for joining us on Sound Ideas.
Thanks for having
us,
Mike.
Jeff and Marcy Pritz talking with GLT's Mike McCurdy. Find a blow-by-blow account of the cross-country adventure at normal2wander.com. That's normal, then the number 2, wander.com. GLT's next travel adventure takes you to magical Ireland at the best time in a decade to see the dazzling display of the Northern Lights, a land of glaciers and volcanoes, spectacular waterfalls and lagoons. The trip is in February of 2018. Learn all about it at an informational slideshow on Wednesday, May 31st at 5:30 p.m. Details about the trip and the informational meeting are at WGLT.org. You can find individual stories and complete episodes of Sound Ideas at our website, WGLT.org. Thanks to Laura Kennedy and Mike McCurdy for today's show. Thanks as well for choosing WGLT Normal, Bloomington Normal's public media. I'm Charlie Schlenker.